Chapter 3. Coming up through layers of sleep, Charlie imagined he was nuzzling his wife's ear, into which he inserted his tongue. Then, shifting his body, whispered to her, "As they'd say in South London, honey, you're the business." At this point he awoke and found himself wrapped around a pillow. Initially, he was angry to find she'd gone, sneaked off in the middle of the party, he thought. Then, after he'd read and destroyed the note, he mentally bayed to a non-existent moon, which all went to show that Bex had seriously misread him when she told Liz Lydiard that her new husband was of a forgiving and understanding nature. Charles stumped around the flat for some 30 minutes, muttering terrible curses, but he was nothing if not pragmatic. Slowly, the fuse of his irritation began to burn less brightly, while the sting of a supposed slight became more bearable. Bex was a copper, and coppers did not work sociable hours. If anyone knew about these things, Charlie did. In truth, he was nervous for his new wife, as he always was when she was off doing her anti-terrorist thing. He had no doubt that her working life could be dangerous, yet he'd never hint at his concern. Charlie had become not simply husband, friend, and lover, but also, by a short head, father. He showered and shaved, then tried to rearrange what hair was left, peering at himself in the big mirror over the hand basin, cocking his head to one side like a bird preening itself, or listening for worms boring through the earth. "And now," he murmured to himself in his earnest David Attenborough voice, "and now the lesser-crested gauntlet views the future with some concern." "You're natty, that's what you are, Charlie," Bex would say to him. "From what's left of your hair to the tips of your highly polished shoes. Natty, like some ex-major of Marines living the life on half pay." He grinned at his reflection, did a little squaring of the shoulders, caught a hint of Bex's scent from the early hours, then went to find the Hoover to get on with cleaning the flat, like a good housefrau. "L.A.'s fine in the sunshine, most of the time." He sang along with Neil Diamond, thinking he was becoming a bit of a golden oldie. The audio was turned up so high he almost missed hearing the doorbell. But not quite. Kit Palfrey leaned against the jamb, doing his best to look elegant and almost succeeding, his face half-lit in a hideous grin.
"What do you want, Kit?"
Gauntlet didn't even sound surprised to see him. They had been close. Charlie and Kit, in spite of the difference in ages. When the truth was out and Palfrey revealed as a traitor, Charlie had taken it personally. It was as though Kit Palfrey had betrayed him on a physical level, as if he'd gone around behind Charlie's back, tapping every single wife and lover Gauntlet had held dear. "A few minutes of your valuable time, Chuck."
"Don't think so. And don't call me Chuck. You come through my door, the next thing I know is I'm in the tower for consorting with the enemy."
"Don't be bloody stupid, Charlie. I'm hardly the enemy. Or didn't anyone tell you the facts of life?"
"Give me a for instance."
"Try Raleigh Hansman for a start." Back in the old days, Roland Raleigh Hansman had been the office manager for all the supernumeraries, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, who worked within the intelligence community. Raleigh Hansman was the man you went to if you wanted permission to fart, or so they said. In fact, Raleigh Hansman really wanted to be in the thick of it. Raleigh Hansman was a little jealous of Charlie's success as a holder and preserver of secrets. Now Charlie shook his head, indicating a negative, then took a pace back and said,
"I'm coming, but I haven't got all day."
"Very civil of you, Chuck." Palfrey walked in, dropped his body into Gauntlet's favourite chair, and rested his right ankle on his left leg, just above the knee. He wore yellow socks. Charlie realized the damage was probably done already, that the security service had taken to advertising in the popular dailies did not mean that it had lost its edge. It was unlikely that Kit Palfrey had given the watchers the slip, which meant Gauntlet and his new wife would already have one black mark against them for being in the same theatre as Palfrey, while his open visit to Dolphin Square merely compounded the sin.
"Don't see Raleigh these days."
Charlie eased himself into the chair usually favoured by Bex. There was a distinct protest from the Springs.
"You're trying to sell me something, Kit?"
Only the obvious, Chuck. Nobody's in my wake. No one's watching in the shadows.
Because we're all good friends now. Come off it, Kit.
No, I really thought you'd have been in the charmed circle. Need to know and all that. But you can ring them and check up. Point is, I was never the bad boy everyone made out. When I nipped over the curtain, I was still on the side of the angels. Always was, always have been. If you really don't know the form, give them a bell.
Gauntlet snorted. Don't have the number any more, Kit. I'm out. Finished. The book's closed, and titles have rolled.
3 seconds silence.
But you say I shouldn't expect a visit in the night?
From whom? The law, or our friends across the river? Nobody's going to call.
After a long silence, during which Gauntlet inspected his fingernails, Kit Palfrey reached for the leather briefcase that he'd placed beside the chair.
Like to show you something, old thing.
Show away. But why me?
Why you?
Lifting the case onto his knees and fiddling with the locks.
Why not?
Saw you at the Dutchman last night, and thought old Charlie always liked a mystery, loved to join up the dots, finish the crossword.
The catches clicked back noisily, and Kit lifted the lid.
Pretty picks, to start with.
His hands slid into the case, fingers and thumbs snapping like bulldog clips, and coming out with several matte black-and-white photographs that he waved in Gauntlet's direction. Charlie reached over, took the pictures, his slim fingers clumsy, crawling across them, separating them sluggishly, looking down but not really seeing what had been captured by the lens. Slowly, he took in that the bulk of the images appeared to be of documents. He also quickly discerned that the written characters were mainly from the Greek alphabet. Inevitably, in a dark corner of his mind, Charlie saw a figure crouched over a desk, using a focal-length chain and a Minox to make these same photographs.
"What am I looking at?"
he asked, remaining dead-eyed.
"The originals."
Palfrey spoke as though Gauntlet could read minds and had mastered the whole thing. Then the pause lengthened for effect before he said,
"Probably the only existing documents describing the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, written within hours of the events taking place."
Slightly stunned silence stretching toward oblivion.
"Possibly the greatest religious find in the history of man. Mind-bending."
Gauntlet frowned, bent his head even lower to peer at the prints, then looked into the eyes of Kit Palfrey.
"You're kidding me. You mean you think they're for real? You're pulling my leg, Kit. Never."
"Absolutely. The biggest story ever to come out of the shadows."
"You believe this? You believe that they're genuine? Better than the Gospels?"
"You're repeating yourself. These are much better than the Gospels, Chuck. The earliest Gospel was maybe written a century after the death and resurrection, maybe earlier. But these were written in the weeks before and in the days just after. They're a different kind of gospel, more immediate, also a touch more colourful."
The figure with the Minox was replaced by a memory. Kit Palfrey lounged in an overstuffed easy chair in front of a long window that afforded a view down Marylebone High Street. His long legs stretched out in front of him, crossed at the ankles, displaying a pair of yellow socks, like the ones he wore now, which had jogged Charlie's memory. Yellow socks above immaculately polished ox-blood shoes. "Talk about natty," he thought. Kit was younger, and this was a remembered day long gone when there was laughter and happiness. In that still centre of his turning world, Charlie saw Palfrey throw back his head and bray with laughter.
"In the war it was a different kind of game," he said. "We should make all you desk-bound wallers do time in Moscow itself, experience things at close quarters. In your case, Chuck, the other side of the wall will do. Send you there for a month."
Gauntlet recognized the words for what they were. Glib little stings, aimed at anyone who didn't go out and earn his living dangerously. Kit Palfrey was certainly going to do time in Moscow, while Charlie stayed in London and home counties, advising on legal matters, and occasionally cross-questioning suspects, or people who had, as a famous author said, come in from the cold.